Chapter 20. And he knows it, but no other but God. When I see him, I will tell him a secret that will drive away his trouble, then he will hold up his head again. I was miserable with curiosity to know what it was that she would tell him, but she did not say, and I did not expect she would. She was but a child, it is true, but she was not a chatterer to tell great matters and make herself important to little people. No, she was reserved, and kept things to herself, as the truly great always do. The next day Queen Yolande got one victory over the king's keepers, for, in spite of their protestations and obstructions, she procured an audience for our two knights, and they made the most they could out of their opportunity. They told the king what a spotless and beautiful character Joan was, and how great and noble a spirit animated her, and they implored him to trust in her, believe in her, and have faith that she was sent to save France. They begged him to consent to see her. He was strongly moved to do this, and promised that he would not drop the matter out of his mind, but would consult with his council about it. This began to look encouraging. 2 hours later there was a great stir below, and the innkeeper came flying up to say a commission of illustrious ecclesiastics was come from the king his very self, understand? Think of this vast honor to his humble little hostelry. And he was so overcome with the glory of it, that he could hardly find breath enough in his excited body, to put the facts into words. They were come from the king, to speak with the maid of Vaucouleurs. Then he flew downstairs, and presently appeared again, backing into the room, and bowing to the ground with every step, in front of four imposing and austere bishops and their train of servants. Joan rose, and we all stood. The bishops took seats, and for a while no word was said, for it was their prerogative to speak first, and they were so astonished to see what a child it was that was making such a noise in the world and degrading personages of their dignity to the base function of ambassadors to her in her plebeian tavern, that they could not find any words to say at first. Then presently their spokesman told Joan they were aware that as he had a message for the king, wherefore she was now commanded to put it into words, briefly and without waste of time or embroideries of speech. As for me, I could hardly contain my joy. Our message was to reach the king at last. And there was the same joy and pride and exultation in the faces of our knights too, and in those of Joan's brothers. And I knew that they were all praying us. He was that the awe which we felt in the presence of these great dignitaries, and which would have tied our tongues and locked our jaws, would not affect her in the like degree, but that she would be enabled to word her message well, and with little stumbling, and so make a favorable impression here, where it would be so valuable and so important. Ah, dear, how little we were expecting what happened then. We were aghast to hear her say what she said. She was standing in a reverent attitude, with her head down and her hands clasped in front of her, for she was always reverent toward the consecrated servants of God. When the spokesman had finished, she raised her head and set her calm eye on those faces, not any more disturbed by their state and grandeur than a princess would have been, and said, with all her ordinary simplicity and modesty of voice and manner, "Ye will forgive me, reverend sirs, but I have no message save for the king's ear alone." Those surprised men were dumb for a moment, and their faces flushed darkly. Then the spokesman said, "Harkee, do you fling the king's command in his face, and refuse to deliver this message of yours to his servants appointed to receive it? God has appointed me to receive it, and another's commandment may not take precedence of that. I pray you let me have speech for his grace the Dauphin. Forbear this folly, and come with your message. Deliver it, and waste no more time about it. You err indeed, most reverend fathers in God, and it is not well. I am not come hither to talk, but to deliver Orleans, and lead the Dauphin to his good city of Reims, and set the crown upon his head. Is that the message you send to the king?" But Joan only said, in the simple fashion which was her wont, "Ye will pardon me for reminding you again, but I have no message to send to anyone. The king's messengers rose in deep anger and swept out of the place without further words, we and Joan kneeling as they passed. Our countenances were vacant, our hearts full of a sense of disaster. Our precious opportunity was thrown away. We could not understand Joan's conduct, she who had been so wise until this fatal hour. At last the Sieur Bertrand found courage to ask her why she had let this great chance to get her message to the king go by. Who sent them here? She asked. The king. Who moved the king to send them? She waited for an answer. None came, for we began to see what was in her mind, so she answered herself, the Dauphin's council moved him to it. Are they enemies to me, and to the Dauphin's weal, or are they friends? Enemies, answered the Sieur Bertrand. If one would have a message go sound and ungarbled, does one choose traitors and tricksters to send it by? I saw that we had been fools, and she wise. They saw it too, so none found anything to say. Then she went on. They had but small wit that contrived this trap. They thought to get my message, and seemed to deliver it straight, yet deftly twist it from its purpose. You know that one part of my message is but this, to move the Dauphin by argument and reasonings, to give me men at arms, and send me to the siege. If an enemy carried these in the right words, the exact words, and no word missing, yet left out the persuasions of gesture and supplicating tone and beseeching looks that inform the words, and make them live, where were the value of that argument? Whom could it convince? Be patient, the Dauphin will hear me presently, have no fear. The Sieur de Metz nodded his head several times, and muttered as to himself. She was right and wise, and we are but dull fools, when all is said. It was just my thought, I could have said it myself, and indeed it was the thought of all there present. A sort of awe crept over us, to think how that untaught girl, taken suddenly and unprepared, was yet able to penetrate the cunning devices of a king's trained advisers and defeat them. Marveling over this, and astonished at it, we fell silent, and spoke no more. We had come to know that she was great in courage, fortitude, endurance, patience, conviction, fidelity to all duties in all things, indeed, that make a good and trusty soldier, and perfect him for his post. Now we were beginning to feel that maybe there were greatnesses in her brain that were even greater than these great qualities of the heart. It set us thinking. What Joan did that day bore fruit the very day after. The king was obliged to respect the spirit of a young girl who could hold her own, and stand her ground like that, and he asserted himself sufficiently to put his respect into an act instead of into polite and empty words. He moved Joan out of that poor inn, and housed her, with us her servants, in the castle of Cerdray, personally confiding her to the care of Madame de Bellier, wife of old Raoul de Gaucourt, master of the palace. Of course, this royal attention had an immediate result. All the great lords and ladies of the court began to flock there to see and listen to the wonderful girl soldier that all the world was talking about, and who had answered the king's mandate with a bland refusal to obey. Joan charmed them everyone with her sweetness and simplicity and unconscious eloquence, and all the best and capablest among them recognized that there was an indefinable something about her that testified that she was not made of common clay, that she was built on a grander plan than the mass of mankind, and moved on a loftier plane. These spread her fame. She always made friends and advocates that way. Neither the high nor the low could come within the sound of her voice, and the sight of her face, and go out from her presence indifferent. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.